Reactor online. Sensors online. Weapons online. All systems nominal.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unicorn Company. Today, we will have a pretty interesting episode. Well, I hope interesting, as well as, as we open up Season 3 of the Unicorn Company podcast. Okay, so starting off, I wanted to go over some news. First of all, I think I've mentioned it before, but I'm going to say it again. Southern Assault 2 is gearing up for this November in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. This event is being put on by the wonderful folks over at Fortress Miniatures and Games and will take place from November 5th to 6th. The tournament is a 375 format. It is faction specific but not era specific, and you use your entire list in each game. Now, I do want to go ahead and go over something that I found out about this and is quite important. So in playtesting with my friend Roz, something came up as far as a question of, do you have to stick specifically to faction, and do you have to stick to a, like, even though it's not era specific, are you playing in a, you know, are you like going Federated Suns, FedCom Civil War, and you can only pick from that? The answer is no-ish. Okay, so I asked on Fortress's Discord about it because, you know, it was a question that came up. And from what I found, here's what Robert said to me. And Robert is the guy who owns Fortress. He said, so as you know from last year, we'll have the Army comp scoring. If someone cherry picks the best units throughout all eras, it will severely hurt their score. I was trying to let people have fun with their lists without limiting, but I fully intend for comp score to counter anyone going crazy min-maxing. I encourage you to stay close to the faction and era, but we are not forcing it. And then he does go on to say, if you have a force in the 3100 era, but want a mech from 3055 that may have survived to that era, we're not going to say no. If you have 3150, 3100, 3050, 2750 mechs all in one force, questions will abound. So essentially, you are not stuck to the era, and you are more or less not locked into the faction, but you can kind of wiggle around a little bit, which I think is nice because it does let people have forces that might have salvaged stuff from other, you know, like a Ghost Bear force with something that might be a Hell's Horses mech or something like that. But you're not going to have like whole, you know, if you cherry pick the best of every fact or best of every era for a faction or something like that, then obviously you're going to, you know, the comp score is going to reflect this. Also, I will be sign up is already open. A link to the sign up sheet and players pack will be in the description. Also, the new beginners box that was featured at Gen Con is available. This is the Vindicator edition, as they're calling it, and comes with a Vindicator and a Griffin as plastic miniatures. There is a new issue of Shrapnel out. Being their 10th issue, they have made it a double, and from the preview blurb, it looks like it talks a bit about what happened with House Arano, as well as the Black Marauder, and it, you know, this looks like it should be a pretty interesting addition. I will see. I'm probably going to start seeing if I can do reviews of the Shrapnel editions, because I think that would be something fun to cover. And it won't be like the main episode, but it'll be, or maybe all part of one big episode. Who knows? There are two new fiction pieces coming out. One is simply called Marauder and covers, from what I can tell, the infamous Black Marauder. And the other is Jaguar's Leap, which looks like it covers the newly reformed Smoke Jaguars and gives us a taste of this not quite new clan. Both books are available as e-publications and will be coming soon to print on demand. Let's see. So today, as far as our main subject, I want to go ahead and talk about 3D printing. Yes, I've already talked about it. And you're sitting there going, Carrie, you talked about this before. And yeah, I did. But to be fair, I think it was pretty half-assed. And I could put a lot more effort into explaining why I think 3D printing is a good thing and where I see it going with the industry. I will say that the biggest driver behind this is that I plan on reviewing a number of 3D model artists over the course of this season, and that would include everything from artists who have Patreons to those who are putting out remixes on Thingiverse and Cults 3D. I also want to cover this because, frankly, I was disappointed in the recent quality of releases for the Premium Mechs and wanted to talk about the quality of minis that can be made on a home printer, like a Mars 2, for example. So, you know what? Without any real further ado, let's go ahead and get this rolling. Okay. So, when people in the community hear about 3D printing and have only bought miniatures from Iron Wind or Catalyst, or their fair forebears, and please forgive the dogs in the background. I have the windows open. It is a beautiful night out here in Virginia, even though I'm in the middle of nowhere in Virginia. But anyway, continuing on, or their forebears, Ralpartha. They generally think of poorly done MechWarrior Online rips of designs, models with way too many blocky parts, which have odd things at odd angles, small parts that are far too spindly to be printed appropriately at an 8 mm scale, which the line currently is. What a lot of these people don't realize, though, is that a number of miniatures manufacturers, Illicit keeps on growing, in fact, are moving towards 3D printing for their masters. And sometimes they aren't done as well as they think. Hammerhead, Madcat TC, I'm looking at those. We can see this in other companies' minis too, such as some of the newer stuff being provided by Games Workshop, where observant YouTubers, not all of which I agree with, have, well, political reasons, have pointed out that print layers are visible in photos of like previews, or even new Privateer Press stuff, which apparently, if I understand properly, they are going whole hog into 3D printing their models and are no longer going to be casting. And as much as they want to charge for them, I really hope they're putting out the cleanest prints known to humanity. There are other game designers who are using 3D printing for their games, notably One Page Rules. They've released a number of STLs for the factions in its games. And this means that players aren't buying product from One Page Rules, but instead are buying STL files, which they then print themselves and use. I mean, I'm sure that this has turned some heads in the industry because before, if you wanted to play a game, you had to buy the rule book, and then the minis for the game and the source books. The model that One Page Rules is using, though, is a bit different as the games themselves are miniature agnostic and can use minis from any 28 mm sci-fi game within reason. Now, a note, this is what historical games used to do, before Games Workshop and stuff like that came around. This was their model. It was you bought the rule book from Osprey or whoever, and you got your models from Perry, you know? What does all of this mean as far as the expansion of 3D printing into the hobby and the wargaming hobby and BattleTech, the space, the wargaming, that I have gotten totally tongue-tied. The wargaming hobby space and BattleTech in particular. I think it means we're going to see three divergent models out there for wargames, and BattleTech's going to need to choose one. Also, not all of them will be successful. The first of these will be the closed system. You buy our minis that we make. That's it. No workaround, no nothing. You just buy our models. Right now, that is what stuff like Warhammer, BattleTech, there's a few others, but like Infinity, basically games that have specific ranges that go with their models that you have to have. The next one you have are wargames like the wargames like Old or an open model, where you buy the rule books from the company making the game and you just source the minis yourself. Like I said, this is the historical model. This is what games for years were using in before like Games Workshop came along. It's an independent game developer's like dream because all you need is Well, hell, you don't even need to print the rule book anymore. You just need to know how to make a rule book and sell it. And then I think there's going to be a third model, which is a combination of the two, where you buy the source books through the company, and you can either buy miniatures that they make or source the minis through buying STL files and printing them or going to a third party. And even having someone else print the files for you, but essentially, like an amalgam of one-page rules in the historical model, where you have your rules, you have physical product the company can put out, but you also have that company putting out STL files, which can be used for, if people want to do it themselves. Now, the closed model is probably preferable, definitely preferable to creators and manufacturers of tabletop games on the more industrial scale. In the long run, though, I think it's a dying model because 3D printing is becoming more and more common, and the ability to do it is becoming more and more accessible to the modern gamer. Or even just the model painter. Like there's a lot of facets to this that we don't look at. Like sometimes people just want a 28 millimeter scale Marauder to paint. Or they want a normal scale Marauder to paint. They just like painting models, or Warhammer models, or Infinity, or whatever. But yeah, so I mean, there's more accessibility, and I don't know. There's something else we need to talk about with 3D models, but that's something we'll get into in a little bit. So let's say, for sake of argument, the third model gains traction. What I would see is a company that puts out STL files like one-page rules. They also have the ability to, they in limited production themselves make the models, probably through some of the newer systems we've seen with cheaper plastic resin or plastic casting. I forget the name of the system that it is. But also, you can just source the model somewhere else. Now, when you look at the buy-in of getting into printing your models, so let's say you go that route. You aren't looking at the big layout that big of an outlay when you begin. A decent 3D printer, such as a Mars 2, is going to run you between $171 to $202, depending on if you want the standard or the pro. That's from Amazon right now. A bottle of resin is going to be about $30, give or take. And this is the ABS resin that I'm using. And then let's add on about $20 for ancillary things you need, like alcohol, gloves, something to clean the mini in. As far as to start, the sun will work perfectly, providing you UV light. But making a UV chamber is not that hard. I literally use a Lowe's bucket with string LED lights. Yeah, it's not that expensive or that hard. So your beginning outlay for materials and everything else, all included, is somewhere around like $220 to $250. So I know the next thing you're going to say, but Carrie, I don't have any files and you need a computer. Well, I'm taking for granted that the computer is probably going to be something you already own. They're pretty ubiquitous nowadays. The software to slice it comes with the printer, and of course, the files, you can actually get a good number of models off of like Cults and Thingiverse for free. So you have a source for models, you have a source, you have a way to slice them and all that other stuff. Now, as you go on, you may be interested in using Patreon, which is a thing, but most people start off with free files. Now, as a new person, you'll want to get everything dialed in with your printer. This can be done getting a calibration test file off of either Thingiverse or Cults. It'll let you know if you're dialed in and the level of detail and what it prints. If it's off, you adjust your settings, exposure, everything else. And to be fair, I found the exposure settings I use are pretty good for doing miniatures like mechs. And I think they're the factory settings. Though I do have custom settings for my supports, and they have worked wonderfully for me so far. As we get further into this, I think I might go over them, maybe on this episode, maybe another, or maybe just a little thing all by itself. That way, people who are just curious about it can get it and not worry. Now, once you have the printer calibrated, it's time to print some mechs. You can find pre-supported files on Thingiverse, a very small number, but they are there, and cults. Starting with the factory settings for the supports, I would do one or two minis. Do not trust automatic supports. It's not always the most cooperative of things, and quite often will miss spots. This is something that can be hard at first, but as you practice more and more, you'll get better at doing your own supports on the models. And I would start off small at first if you're doing your own supports, maybe some tanks and vehicles, then work your way up to some light mechs, and then your bigger, heavier things, as you go. So now, after you've sunk your teeth and you got like a few mechs and vehicles done, with the average mech being about 10 to 15 milliliters of your resin, let's say it's 15 average weights because of waste and initial misprints, you're looking at somewhere in the ballpark of 60 to 65 mechs per bottle of resin. Now, let that sink in for a second. Even with all the initial upfront costs, for $250, you have roughly 60 miniatures. Now, I'm not a mathematician, but you're paying 50 cents a mech for the resin. So if we get into accounting for the cost of everything, you're paying about $390 a mech after that, with resin and consumables such as gloves, alcohol, other items, you're averaging 75 cents a mini, once you're through the first batch. If you have a Patreon from the start and you're printing one bottle of mechs a month, that pushes it up to roughly 417. So let's say five. So for the first month, you're spending $5 per mech. After that 5 month, or after that first run of resin, literally after the first bottle of resin, you are now paying what, 75 cents a miniature, $1 a miniature at most. That includes your consumables, the Patreon, everything. I mean, if you are printing your own miniatures and you're paying so little for them, now oh, excuse me, I just lost my total train of thought. The barrier of entry for that game is obscenely low, and it makes the barrier of entry for most games really low. Now, I do understand that a lot of people don't have a printer and resin or the time to print and clean and cure the miniatures. So that's where the thing I wanted to bring up later comes in, the dreaded Etsy web 3D printed mini seller or even a printing service. I know there's some printing services out there and the charges can swing wildly. A lot of the people who sell 3D printed minis on Etsy or online in general will do custom printing for you. Just expect your results to vary. I personally do custom printing for people, generally on a model that's unsupported. It's like 15 for the first model, and each subsequent of that same model will be about maybe $5 at most. And the reason for the extra money is that there's a good amount of work in supporting a model correctly, test printing if there's something wrong, correcting that. Once it's dialed in, though, it's pretty much press play and walk away. If you are going to have someone custom print minis for you, though, you might want to go ahead and order something from their store first. And I'm not saying this because, hey, look, you want to support them. Well, no, actually, it has a lot to do with quality and turnaround time. So let's say, for example, I order 3D printed minis from Bob's Mechs on Etsy. I don't even know if that exists. If it does, I'm sorry, Bob. I'm not trying to make an example of you. But let's say I order something from Etsy from a company called Bob's Mechs, and I order like what I found is a good one is the crab, because the crab is really weird and it's like positioned in a way where you have to get under it, and and you get the model looks wonderful from the top. Flip the model over, like immediately, just look at the bottom of the model. That's where you want to look. You will see what kind of quality they're doing on their support work. Also, check the back of the model. If there's still detail on the back, on the bottom, stuff like that, then that's wonderful. So you'll want to go ahead and take a look at that and make sure that, you know, they're going to be doing good work for you. Also, on the point of the Etsy sellers, they're not going away. Especially those who create, well, they're not Etsy sellers, but the online 3D printers who create and sell original product, no, they're not going away. If they're selling somebody else's stuff, they should have permission to sell those models. Like, some of the online sellers who print the 3D models will either make their own, get permission from the creator, or a combination of the two. There are others out there, though, who are outright pirates, and they should be dealt with. Now, if you're taking a digital item created by someone, then printing and reselling it without their permission, that is piracy. This is the attitude that game manufacturers would have to take with 3D printed sellers, in my opinion, to allow companies themselves to sell STL files. If someone creates something similar but not the same, leave it be. It's technically not your model. But if someone buys an entire catalog of files for minis and starts selling them in an Etsy store, well, it's different. Or even if they're going on to like Thingiverse and getting somebody's free creations and selling them on an Etsy store, that's different. That's not, that's not right, and it should be stopped. I think that else having STL files for sale, as well as giving the option to buy physical product, is the best option here for game companies in the future. And I say that because there's something that I didn't mention yet that can be learned from Privateer Press's crazy idea to just print 3D print everything. And that is just like you do with books. A company can turn miniatures into something like the print-on-demand system, where instead of dealing with a stock of solid miniatures, you literally have someone design the minis in parts. You have either them or someone else pre-support and test print the models. You see it, and then once it's all dialed in, you get promo pics. You send some off to your in-company artists. After that, you have multi-part kits that you can print and have clean, cured, and packaged within a few hours. And if you have a brand new release, of course, you go ahead and print some stock to have on hand, but it totally eliminates the need for a real physical stock and literally makes it where you have shelves of resin ready to become whatever the customer has ordered. So, what am I saying here with what likely seems like a ramble? And it kind of is. Well, I'm saying that there's a place in our game, in our hobby, and in the future of wargaming in general for an almost symbiotic relationship between the game companies, the players, and those who wish to 3D print for their own use and as a service to others in the tabletop gaming hobby, including BattleTech. Now, having said all of this about 3D printing and touching on sources for STL files, this season I will be doing a segment on the artists who bring us these files, both with and without Patreons. This month we'll be talking about DeJong Lewis Advanced Weapons. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I do have to let you know that DJL, as I like to call them, is one of the Patreons that MythKitty Mini uses and has permission to print their files. I am mainly going to look at the style DJL uses more than anything and touch on the ease of printing from the standpoint of setting up their models to print. Now, when I found them, they did two styles of miniatures for printing. The first of these was a multi-part to the nth degree, some of which I actually would not print as a multi-part due to how many pieces there are. The other option was full-on post minis. And they did provide quite a number of poses, or they do actually. Since then, taking in feedback from their patrons, they have moved to simpler multi-part kit systems, which I think are a joy to work with, that usually has a mini with a torso assembly, two arms, and a leg assembly. Most of their models, you know, in this format are an incredible joy to print. And it is far easier to set up the minis to be printed. The guys who create these models do a fantastic job. They do base the art style for their miniatures off the old Mech Assault series of games, from what I can tell, if I remember right. They have proportions that fit very well with the current line of miniatures for BattleTech, but also would be at home in other 6 to 8 millimeter sci-fi games, which are model agnostic, such as Polyversal. They do have some battle armor as well as vehicles. The vehicles are amazingly well done, and the battle armor, they have three different suits so far, are highly detailed and will print as well at an 8 millimeter scale as they would at a 28 to 32 millimeter scale for a skirmish game. Also, something that is more of a recent development is offering a large number of variants for the minis, allowing players to print the exact miniature they want for their forces. These minis are each designed from the ground up with that mech assault aesthetic in mind, which gives them a unique look on the tabletop, comparable to modern miniatures in everything from detail to scaling. If you'd like to check them out, their Patreon can be found at patreon.com d_law, LAW. Now that we've looked extensively at the possible impact of 3D printing, as well as one of my favorite creators, let's take a look at Season 3's first mech tech, the Spider, after this word from our sponsor.
In 3067, a crack team of mech warriors were attacked on their home world. After being left for dead, they escaped to the underground. Still wanted by those who tried to eliminate them, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem and no one else can help, you can hire Sigma Squad from Myth Kitty Minis. These warriors come with the lethal Buzzard Mark III heavy mech carrying a blistering array of missiles, a Nightsaber medium mech capable of sniping with its powerful railgun, a Mountain Lion light mech which uses its speed and firepower to hit the enemy at any range, and the Blackbird light mech, a marvel of electronics warfare, which gives them an edge on the modern battlefield. Disclaimer: Sigma Squad not guaranteed to solve all your problems and are likely to end any battle in a heroic last stand.
All right, so if you want to help support the podcast, go to mythkittyminis.bigcartel.com and you can find the Sigma Squad pack under unit packs in their products. Now let's get into the Spider. The Spider began life as a special operations unit for the Starlink Defense Forces. The design was first requisitioned for the SLDF in 2650 for SLDF commandos. Newhart Industries, in their one and only mech design, made the Spider, which for its time was probably one of the best mechs for the job. The Spider isn't built to directly face the enemy, but to avoid direct conflict, and instead create chaos and confusion for the enemy. As the Great Houses learned after the fall of the Star League, the Spider makes a great raider due to its high speed, jump capability, and hands, which means it could get behind enemy lines, grab whatever it could, and destroy what it couldn't take. I know the Spider itself would evolve into a number of variants and even have another mech directly based on it. I believe, though, that the Spider is what led to the designs that we see on the battlefield today with incredible jump capabilities used in recon and raiding roles. So let's look at the nuts and bolts of this design. The original SLDF design is the SDR-5 Victor. The Spider weighs in and at a scant 30 tons and is built on a standard chassis. The mech is powered by a massive 240 standard engine, which takes up over 33% of its mass. This engine propels it up to 130 kilometers an hour, and in addition to this, the mech has a jump capability of up to 240 meters. In this mech, speed is life, and it shows in its armor protection with only 3.5 tons of armor. The mech is not meant for head-on fights, but to avoid them. This is backed up by the fact that its only firepower is given by a pair of centerline-mounted medium lasers in the center torso. In fact, speed was such a priority when they built the design to save weight and give it as small of a profile as possible. The mech doesn't even have an ejection system. The battle value of the 5 Victor is 622. So let's look at the two variants that came of it. Now, first of all, I want to mention, unlike many other designs, the Spider never received a royal variant, meaning that it was so good at its job, the Star League did not see a reason to change that. The first variant of the mech, the SDR-5D or Delta, is seen commonly in House Davian's space. It removes a single medium laser for two arm-mounted flamers. The mech becomes a terror for infantry and comes in at 524 BV. The other official variant from Newhart was the SDR-5 Kilo.
This model removes a medium laser, replacing it with two arm-mounted machine guns and a ton of ammunition. To make this possible, the mech reduces its ability to jump by 60 meters. This variant has a battle value of 503. Neither of these variants proved popular, especially as it changes the role of the mech. Really, it changes it a lot in the 5K, the House Karita version. Now, by the 3050s, I don't want to pronounce this, Nemakachi Fusion Products, would begin production of the Spider again. Their first variant is the SDR-7 Mike. The 7M was a full-on rework of the mech from the ground up. Built on an endosteel chassis and clad in ferrofibrous armor, it freed up space that was used to replace the standard medium lasers with medium pulse lasers, giving it increased accuracy. The mech would still lack an ejection system, though, and has a battle value of 621. The first two variants based on the 7M were the SDR Charlie and the SDR-8 Mike. The SDRC is a C3 spotter from 3054, which removes the pulse lasers in favor of a single medium laser and a C3 slave, making it a highly effective spotting unit and very good as a recon unit. It has a battle value of 616. The other direct variant is the 8 Mike, which replaces the 7 model's standard heat sinks with double strength models and has a battle value of 588. The 8 Mike did lead to the 9M variant of the mech, which is built on an endosteel frame powered by an extra light engine, clad in light ferrofibrous armor. It is armed with a medium variable speed pulse laser, giving it higher short range damage output and a battle value of 687. Now, the Combine wasn't sitting on its hands with the design either, though. In 3067, the 7 Kilo was introduced. This model is built on an endosteel frame and armored with ferrofibrous armor. Much like the 7M, it also utilizes a light fusion engine. The mech is armed with two medium pulse lasers and finally got an ejection system. The 7K has a battle value of 688. The first spur off the 7K was the 7K2, which was built in 3068 as a scout hunter. The 7K2 does this by lowering its jump capability to 210 meters and reducing its armor to carry an extended range large laser. The battle value of the 7K2 is 884. The next iteration of the 7K came as the 7K Romeo, a field refit dating to about 3074. This refit removes a medium pulse laser for an Angel ECM suite, making it invaluable at disabling enemy C3 networks, and has a battle value of 775. Around the same time, the 7KC came into production. Similar to the 7C, the 7KC removes the 7K's medium pulse lasers for a C3 slave and a light PPC. This model has a battle value of 732. After the word of Blake Jihad, the Combine developed the 8K. This design incorporates a compact gyro, extra light engine, and ferrofibrous armor to mount a snub-nosed PPC, which has been enhanced with a PPC capacitor. It has a battle value of 1,007. Now, concurrently to the 8K, Krupp Armaments developed the 8R model for the Republic of the Sphere. The 8R is based on an experimental prototype from the Liberation of Terra, the 8X. The 8R is built on an endosteel chassis but uses a smaller 210-rated light fusion engine. It has enhanced jump capabilities due to its improved jump jets, which actually allow it to cover 300 meters in a single leap. It has 10 double heat sinks and armed with a pair of ER medium lasers. The 8R has a battle value of 694. The 8X, which the 8R would be based on, is an experimental design used in the Liberation of Terra from the word of Blake. The 8X was designed and built in 3078 and enhanced its mobility through the use of a partial wing. It has a battle value of 765. It would have a field refit that removed the medium pulse lasers of the 8X and replaced them with 5 ER small lasers and a sword for very close-in and personal work. The 8XR has a battle value of 754. The final variant of the mech is the SDR-10K. This model removes all the standard weapons of the 9K, has ballistic reinforced armor, and carries a single large re-engineered laser. This allows it to better defeat the protection of reflective armor units. The 10K has a battle value of 770. Now, with all the classic stuff out of the way here, we can look at the mech and Alpha Strike. And I'll say this, there's a lot of overlap in the designs. But there are some interesting differences, too. So the SDR-5V is type battle mech, size 1, target move 3, has a movement of 16 jump, classified as a scout, has damage values of 1 at short and medium range, lacking anything in long or overheat. It has special of energy, and this all comes in at a nice 21 points. The SDR-5D is essentially identical to this, the flamers not even warranting the heat ability, with an incidental identical stat line and cost, allowing someone technically to run a 5V and 5D in a Unicorn or Wolfnet 350 format and have two of the same mech, essentially. The SDR-5K is type battle mech, size 1, TMM-3, has a movement of 16 with 12 jump. It is, once again, a scout. Its damage values are short and medium of 1, long and overheat of 0, protection of armor 2, structure 3, and has specials of jump weak 1. The 5K comes in at 21 points for what I feel is a noticeable loss in performance over the other two. Next, I'm looking at this SDRC. The mech actually has a bit more bite. Its basics are type battle mech, size 1, TMM-3, movement of 16. It is a striker and has damage values of 220 with no overheat. Armor and structure are 2 armor, 3 structure, and has specials of C3 slave, energy, mech headquarter 1, and comes in at 28 points. A respectable C3 scout. The SDR-7K is once again a striker, having your normal spider profile of battle mech size 1, TMM-3, movement 16, jump, has damage of 2 at short and medium with no longer overheat, and has a special of energy and comes in at 27 points. If you're looking to run two almost identical mechs again, the 7K and the C are pretty much there. The 7K2 reduces its jump capacity and has a movement of 16/14J. Damage values of 1 at short and medium, no longer overheat. Armor of 3, structure of 2, pretty par for the course with the spider, and has the energy special for a point value of 23. The 7KC is something of a mix of the K and the K2 in Alpha Strike. It retains 16 jump of the 7K, has identical damage profile to the 7K2, and gains the C3 slave and mech H-quarter 1 abilities. The 7KC has a PV of 25. 7KR is a great interdictor, once again, has much of the 7K in its stat line, mirroring it in type, size, TMM, while only having 1 at short and medium ranges. Has armor of 3, structure of 1, but instead of C3 capabilities, it has the AECM and ENE abilities, and comes in at 25 points. The 7M is the first newer design from the Merrick branch of the Spider family. This is, most of it's pretty much standard type, battle mech, size 1, TMM-3, movement is 16J. It is classified as a striker. The mech has damage values of 2 at short and medium range, no long, no overheat, and has almost obligatory ENE special that the spider comes with. The 7M comes in at 26 points. After that, we have the 8K. This little machine is actually far more fragile for not much gain. It has a standard battle mech, size 1, TMM-3, has a jump of 16 and is a scout. The mech has damage values of 1 at short and medium, a combined armor and structure of 3 with the special of ENE. The 8K comes in at a mere 18 points, putting it on par with some of the higher-end battle armor in the game. We have the next Merrick evolution, of course, the 8M. It has the commonly seen base spider stat line we're familiar with by now in this episode, and it's classified as a striker. Damage values of 2 at short and medium ranges, once again with no longer overheat, armor of 2, structure of 3, with the ENE special. That one comes in at 26 points. The 8R is an interesting departure from what we normally see. Type battle mech, size 1, TMM-3, movement profile of 14 with 20 jump. It is classified as a scout and has damage values of 1 at short and medium ranges, It has armor and structure of 2 each with the special abilities of ENE and Jump Strong 1. This machine right here is an objective stealer if ever I have seen one. And it comes in at 19 points. So it won't do much to the enemy, but you can leap onto an objective from like almost halfway across the table. So then we have the X series of spiders. The 8X and the 8XR share the same base profiles of Battle Mech size 1, TMM3, movement of 16, 20 jump, and diverge only slightly in their capabilities. The 8X is a striker with damage values of 2 at short and medium, no long, no overheat. For armor, it has armor of 3 and structure 1. The 8X has specials of energy and jump strength 1 at 26 points. The 8XR is identical in all of these regards except for 2. It has a special of melee and costs 1 point more. The last of the Merrick variants is the 9M. This model is more in line with the earlier 7M and has a base profile of Type Battle Mech, size 1, TMM3, 16J. It's classified as a scout and has an impressive 3 at short, 2 at medium, no longer overheat. The mech has a combined 4 armor and structure with the ENE special and has a point value 27. I do have to say it's kind of interesting. It has the highest short damage value and it's not a striker. Finally, we have the 10K. The 10K has the same standard base profile of the 9M mentioned before it. It begins to vary when you look at its role as a scout. It has damage values of 1 at short and medium, no longer overheat, armor of 2, structure of 1. For its special, it has BRA, ballistic resistant armor, energy, and REL for re-engineered lasers. The mech has a point value of 17. So, okay, what do I have to say here? In the later iterations of the Spider, we can eventually see two different divergent courses for its development, depending on which house it's being used by. House Davian seems to have just abandoned the thing after the 3020s, or maybe 3030s. The Free Worlds League seems to lean more towards firepower, and the Draconis Combine is looking for something I can't name what it is. To be fair, if I had to choose variants to run, it would be the 5V and 5D. They're decent for their size, have pretty good mobility, and are basic. The 8X and XR and the R are somewhat scary, as they're capable of reaching a combined TMM of 5 due to having jump strong ability, meaning they start at 3, get 1 for having jump strong, and then they jump and they get 1 more for that, making them a very hard target for even a skill 3 or 2 pilot to take out at medium range. And even at short, they're still hitting on 7s and 8s. And that's if the mech didn't jump into cover. So I appreciate all of you listening to the episode tonight, putting up with my rant about 3D printing. I'll be doing more reviews of the people who are putting the designs out there, and I may even delve into some of the Etsy sellers and see what kind of quality we're looking at. Now, to be fair, I would probably compare them to both Catalyst and to MiffKitty Mini printed miniatures. Those may have to be videos that I can release to my patrons first and then to the general public. So if you like what I do, supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/unicorncompany is absolutely the best way you can help. If you want to get something, then visit MiffKitty Minis. There's an ever-expanding line of miniatures, and it looks like possibly terrain and even some scatter items to start dressing up bases soon. This is Unicorn Actual, signing off. I'm gonna find my meaning, I can make a change, I wanna play.